Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Ah, it's getting to that time of year where we're starting to put stuff on the sidewalks.
Stuff on the sidewalks? Explain yourself.
Well, you know, when that snow falls, you put salt on them.
Okay. I thought
melt
if you, I
ice melt,
meant
yeah.
sidewalk
ice melt.
Sails or something.
Yeah, no. I'm just talking about sidewalk stuff that melts stuff. And this is a time of the year where, you know, a lot of Joey always comes in and he says, make sure your dogs have mitts or that they're you wash their paws, because even the salt, even the salt alone can like dry it up, I guess, and make it
irritated.
Hard and irritated.
Yeah, sure.
Something you don't have to worry about in Las Vegas there.
No, you know, but we're getting out of the triple digits still. So I'm not ready to talk about like, you know, freezing weather. You know, I just want some pleasant 70, 80 degree weather. How about that?
We want you to make sure that what you're putting down on the sidewalk is safe for your animals. And, you know, this is the same thing with spring. Spring comes around, you put stuff on your lawn. We want to make sure that stuff is safe for your animals, too. We're going to have a toxicologist on today from the Pet Poison Helpline. And she will tell us about not only what we've just been talking about, but she'll be talking about a change in ingredients with the Decon mice and rat killer. And sometimes, you know, animals get into this. Have you ever seen that? They get into that kind of stuff, Dr. Debbie?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, quite a bit. We've seen dogs, cats, and, you know, these products are still around. But, you know, the scariest thing is I actually had one of my own dogs get into what I thought was bromethalin while we were out in a remote area.
What's bromethalin?
Yeah.
It's a type of rodenticide that they use for, like, you know, kind of like moles and things out there in the woods and where they try to kill off all these wild critters that they don't want on farmlands. And my Labrador got into something. He ate something and within just a few seconds he became disoriented, almost like fell over, vomited. And it was really quite a scary thing. And
what'd you end up having to do?
Well, you know, there's not a lot you can do. The vomit itself, we tried to save it and then freeze it and test it, you know, to see if we could detect what it was. He did recover. You know, we were out in the field, so we have a dog kit, but we, you know, pretty much just did some nursing care, rest, and he recovered. You know, but we just couldn't prove it, and we tried to warn folks in the area to be aware that there, you know, could be some individuals using, you know, rodent baits out in that area.
Okay. I look forward to talking to this toxicologist because I have so many questions. Also on the show today, we're doing another flashback. We like doing these flashbacks. Today, it's Sheena Easton. We all remember Sheena Easton. She's still alive.
My baby takes the morning train.
Yeah.
That was one of them, right?
She's a big cat lover. She loves cats to the point that it might even be just a little bit over the top. And you know I'm over the top with my cats, but we'll let you be the judge coming up right here on Animal Radio in just a few minutes. What are you working on over there in the newsroom?
Toxoplasma gondii. Is that right, Dr. Debbie, how you say it?
Toxoplasmosis, yes.
It's always been associated with kind of a weirdness in some people.
Makes you crazy.
But now there's actually a benefit to having toxoplasmosis.
Really?
So we'll tell you what that is. Yeah.
I'm going to go play in the kitty litter right now. Well, after this call, let's go to the phones. Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Where are you today?
I'm in Detroit.
Listening in Detroit. So how can we help you? I have the whole team here for you.
I'm doing well. Nine-year-old Yorkie, and she fell ill, and she walked through a pesticide that I had been spraying for some bees, and I was a suspect that she may have suffered some ill effects from that. So I took her to three different veterinarians, and they all three of them kind of discounted my thoughts, and they wanted to give her a multitude of tests and blood tests and this and that, and so anyway. She had some pretty severe symptoms, diarrhea and vomiting, shaking, almost fitful seizures, like sleeping patterns. And this went on for a solid week. And she looked really listless, and we thought we were going to lose her. But now they got her on a series of medications, and she's starting to turn the corner, and she's getting back to herself.
Okay.
So
when you
go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to know when you said she walked through the chemical, How freshly after that was sprayed?
You know, just a few moments, and dumb me, I didn't realize that, you know, this thing was going to, you know, I didn't even read the warnings on the can before I'd sprayed for these bees, and these carpenter bees, actually. And I thought, you know, it's pretty harmless to a dog, you know, because it's specifically for bees. Well, when I read the cautions, I realized that it was a mistake to let the dog anywhere, even outside, when I was spraying for these bees. And it contained these two poisons. I'll tell you what they are, if I may.
Okay.
And one is called imidacloprid.
Okay, yep.
And the other one is pralithrin.
Pyrethrin.
These are two different bug sprays that I tried on these carpenter bees that it's really difficult to eradicate these things. And the reason I was even so adamant about eradicating them is because one of them stung her about a week prior to that.
Okay.
So I wanted them out from underneath my deck. So And I was just a little bit puzzled because I went online and I looked up this ingredient, this imidacloprid, and excuse me if I don't pronounce it that well, imidacloprid. And I looked it up online, and the first thing that popped out was, is this toxic to dogs? Yes. And it described all these symptoms. And every symptom that it described was consistent with exactly what she had and exactly the way she reacted and exactly the way her condition was. And when I went to all these different veterinary hospitals, they all kind of discounted that. And then, you know, I racked up a $1,500 bill for the vets in a couple of days.
All right. Wow. So, you know, if anytime I have a pet kind of walk through freshly sprayed chemical, pesticides of any sort, you know, it is something that I'd be a bit more concerned about. When a product such as this is sprayed and it's dried, or say with like a fertilizer, when it's sprayed and then it's already been watered and, you know, the area is dried, it's not such a risk. But if we get into the pure product, then definitely depending on the concentration of those different ingredients in there, we could be concerned with some effects. Now, imidacloprid, most of the times, and, you know, this is actually in a lot of different types of parasite medication for dogs and cats. So it is safe for them within the normal uses of it with dogs and cats. Now, but that's not counting, you know, the bug sprays that we're talking about that are being used for pest control. So if we do have exposure to that, there is the potential. Most commonly, very honestly, it's limited to stomach upset and digestive upset. We don't tend to see a lot of other issues that can come on with that. There can be some rare neurologic problems, and I have seen that a little bit more in some of the super tiny little dogs. But because imidacloprid is, expelled, it's eliminated from the body within 24 hours, that's kind of why maybe as a veterinary mind, we might be saying, you know what, this doesn't necessarily fit the timeline of what you're seeing to what is the norm of how long this medication is within the body. So the other thing I'd throw out there is you mentioned a bee sting, and there are dogs that I've seen have a more prolonged effect after a bee envenomation. So they can actually go on and have some problems with liver disease, neurologic problems. They can develop some acute, very sudden kidney problems, and even some other blood problems where they can have clotting issues. And some of that can be very suddenly, but some of that can be a little bit more prolonged and after an exposure to a bee sting, especially if they got into like a lot of bees. So that's even something that would make me a little curious. The hard thing is, you know, I sense your frustration, and the hard thing is we can't tell you what caused this. We only can follow the evidence and try to, you know, support the body. And I think in some of your notes, was there also some concern that there was some liver problem she was having as well?
She had an existing liver problem for several years now. She's on this medication called Demerara.
Okay.
And she's been on that she's 9 years old. She's probably been on that for at least 5 or 6 years already of her life.
And we know a lot of little toy breed dogs can have hepatic dysfunction or what we call microvascular dysplasia, or some are even borderline liver shunts. So if that's kind of been something on her radar, yeah, she's not going to have the resiliency to kind of about jump through, you know, some medical crisis like that. So, well, I hope it sounds like, you know, you've got her the care she needs, and hopefully everything gets back to 100%. They're very soon.
We have, and they've got her on a host of medications here, and they gave her a couple of injections to hydrate her because she wasn't eating, wasn't drinking. Now she's eating and drinking again, and she's getting back to herself. Actually, she didn't bark once in a week, and now somebody walked by with a big dog, and she was barking at the dog. So she's getting back to her normal mossy attitude, and she's a 4-pound Yorkie, and she looks everybody just adores her. She looks like a little stuffed animal, and we absolutely and we're empty nesters, so this is like a child.
Sure.
Us. And we lost her. We had another Yorkie prior to this one for 17 years. And and then she passed on, and we had to put her down. She had a collapsed trachea. And my wife moped around for about a year, and then I appeared one day at the door with this puppy. So this is like her child.
Sure.
All
our best go out to you and Lola, and I wish her a speedy recovery there.
Thank you for your call. Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. If you love stories about finding strength through the wisdom of dogs, look no further than A Reason for Hope by award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler. It's a beautifully uplifting story about a courthouse dog named Hope, who's trained to comfort victims throughout the legal process. A Reason for Hope is now available everywhere books are sold. And if you need more information, you can visit them over at kensingtonbooks.com. Thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Judith Chapman from Young and the Restless at CBS, and I'm on Animal Radio right now, and I'm asking everyone out there to please spay and neuter your pets.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's no secret. Once a week, I go visit a shrink.
Once a week?
Yeah. I'm telling you now. If it's I'm proud of it. I'm not going to hide that. What about animals? Should they be seeing a shrink? Did you know there are dog shrinks?
I never thought about it.
Use the proper terminology here, psychologist or psychiatrist. We have Dr. Zazie Todd joining us on Skype. Hi, Dr. Todd. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm very excited to chat with you.
Are you a psychologist for humans or animals?
My background is in human psychology. I have a PhD in psychology, but what I've been doing since 2012 is writing a blog called Companion Animal Psychology, which is about animals. And so I've been researching science, what science tells us about dogs and cats, how to have happy dogs and cats. And at the same time, I've been very lucky because I graduated with honors from the prestigious Academy for Dog Trainers, which is known as the Harvard of Dog Trainers, and I have a certificate of feline behavior with International Cat Care. So, and I'm used to working with dogs and cats that maybe have a few issues.
Okay, so what can I do for my cat or my dog to make them happier?
One of the biggest things you can do is to train them with positive reinforcement. And what that means is that if they do the thing you want them to do, you give them some positive reinforcement, which often will be food. Food is usually the best thing to use. And this applies to cats as well as dogs. There are several reasons this is good. One is that a lot of people, unfortunately, train their dogs or their cats using punishment. So maybe they use electronic shock collars or choke chains or prong collars, or they roll their dog over. Yep. Or if it's a cat, maybe they squirt them with water if they do something they don't like. And especially as far as dogs go, there's quite a big body of research that shows that there are risks to using punishment as a training method. And the risks mainly are to do with causing fear or aggression in your dog. So most of the research is on dogs, and it's been survey studies where they've asked people how they train their dog and what the results are, and does the dog have any behavior problems. And there have also been experimental studies where they've observed people training dogs to see what the results are and the body language. So there are risks to using punishment, that's one thing. But the other thing is there are some benefits to using positive reinforcement in terms of cognitive enrichment. So many dogs perhaps get a bit bored some of the time, maybe cats too if you have an indoor cat, and training with positive reinforcement is a really nice way to provide enrichment for your dog or cat, because it's a fun activity. And there is a study, a really nice study, that shows that dogs like to successfully solve problems, and they prefer to solve the problem and earn a reward than actually just to be given the reward in the first place.
My dog, I know that there's certain situations that she's fearful of. So should I just avoid them altogether or make her work through it?
Depends a little bit on what the situation is, because some situations you can avoid very, very easily, and then the dog never has to deal with being frightened in those situations. But you can also train a dog to not be afraid. There's a technique called desensitization and counter conditioning, which basically breaks the situation down into nice easy bits where your dog is never actually going to feel afraid, and every time it happens you give them some, like a really nice food reward, like a piece of chicken or something with tripe or something like that, so that they're actually going to learn to like the thing they're afraid of. Ultimately, over time, that's a very, very successful way of dealing with fear. But in some cases, for a dog with fear, they actually would benefit from seeing a veterinarian and discussing whether or not medication will help, because in some cases, medication can be very helpful too.
You know, I heard many times that a tired dog was a happy dog, but I've also heard the opposite lately, that you shouldn't tire your dog out.
Well, in terms of physical exercise, I think dogs definitely do need physical exercise, just like we do. And there is a big problem of overweight and obesity in dogs at the moment, which is kind of similar to the situation for us as people. So exercise is important and helpful to help keep a dog's weight down, and again to give them something to do. So playing fetch, going for off-leash walks or long walks on leash. And if you're taking them on leash, the important thing to remember is to give your dog lots of sniffing opportunities, because the walk is for them really and not for you. And the nose is such an important organ for dogs. I think we all know that they like to sniff. They're always finding things to sniff. So when we take them for a walk, we can think of it as a sniffari. That's not my word. I didn't coin that, but I love that word because it conjures up this idea that the walk is for the dog to find lots of really interesting smells. And it's not just physical exercise. It's the smells they get to smell. They can read through their noses, they could read where other dogs have been, what's happened in the neighborhood, who else has been by, that kind of thing. It's really nice for them to have those opportunities.
You have a blog that talks about this kind of stuff and a website. What is the website again?
companionanimalpsychology.com.
Okay, that's a long one there. We'll put links to everything you've heard today at animalradio.pet. What are we going to find at the website?
So every Wednesday I have a new post, and sometimes it's new scientific research about dogs or cats. Sometimes it's an article about how to do things with your dog or cat, how provide enrichment, common answers to problems that people tend to have. I also have a book club, which reads 10 books a year. We read non-fiction books about dogs and cats, and this month we're reading Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon by Bronwyn Dickey, which is fantastic. It's a really good read. Every month we have a new book, and I have a newsletter every month as well.
Very, very cool. I'm going to go check it out as soon as we're done here today. Dr. Zazie Todd, thank you so much for hanging with us and telling us about what you do, and visit the website companionanimalpsychology.com
so you can have a happy dog or happy cat.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Find us at animalradio.com. Log on, learn more.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. So how can getting a sickness from your cat actually change or improve even your life? Well, according to a new study, the mind-controlling parasite that is found in cat feces, scientists have found increases a person's likelihood of studying business and going into entrepreneurial related careers. University of Colorado researchers studied the effects of the parasite Toxoplasma gondii, which is found in wild and even domestic cats, but also in undercooked meats. And their research found that people infected with the parasite were about 1.5 times more likely to major in business with an emphasis on either management or entrepreneurship. About 30% of the world's 7.4 billion people are believed to have been infected at one time or another with the parasite. In fact, in the past, toxoplasma has been linked with impulsive behaviors that led to an increased risk for behaviors like car accidents or road rage, mental illness or drug abuse, and even suicide. Researchers believe that Toxoplasma gondii exposure pushes people toward higher risk reward behaviors and activities. This previous study that they had done back in 2016 even suggested that people diagnosed with intermittent explosive disorder were really twice as likely to carry the Toxoplasma gondii parasite.
Explosive disorder? That sounds like a night after Taco Bell. That's
No.
No, that's not what that is.
See, I think it just explains my road rage now. Now I know why I'm so angry when
it's
I get
cats.
Behind the wheel. It's the cats. It's the cat's fault.
I agree.
This is very interesting because toxoplasmosis has been long time associated with crazy people and nuts. And now you're saying that it's also associated with very successful people. So I guess crazy people and successful people are one and the same.
Well, look, I mean, we humans just have maybe another illness or something to blame our behavior on.
Sure.
You're like, I'm with Judy, like when, you know, your road rage. California has made history, guys, as it becomes the first state in the nation to pass legislation that ends the sale of cosmetics. We're talking products like lipstick, shampoo, and deodorant that have been tested on animals. And though it is likely to be signed by the governor, I know, as of now, nearly 40 countries around the world, including those in the European Union, India, Israel, Guatemala, New Zealand, Norway, South Korea, Taiwan, Turkey, have all banned or severely limited the use of animals for cosmetic testing.
Yay.
And goldfish in Paris are getting a second chance. I think this is fabulous because we are rescuers, right?
Yep.
We rescue all kinds of animals and pets, so why not goldfish? The Paris Aquarium in France has already taken in more than 600 goldfish over the last 2 years, which is a far better option for the fish than it is for, being flushed down a toilet or something, which that's a terrible option. But it's really more complex than you might think. Surrendered goldfish, they undergo a regimen of antibiotics and treatment under quarantine for at least a month before being introduced to their new fish community at the big aquarium. And yes, because these rescued fish are kept in much more elaborate facilities in bigger aquariums, they grow so much larger at the big professional aquarium than they would in any fishbowl. And sometimes they say that is between 8 and 12 inches larger than they would have grown previously with owners who kept them in a bowl. You don't sound nearly as excited as I am how the goldfish are being rescued.
Well, I know people put goldfish and all kinds of fish and turtles back into the wild thinking that, first of all, that they're going to be able to survive. And second, they don't realize the implications of the actual ecosystem when they introduce animals like this back in. So, yeah, I'm glad that the Paris, what is it, their museum? Zoo?
It's called the Paris Aquarium. Yeah.
Okay. So, cool.
I think it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
I think it shows as humans we're evolving, you know, where we're realizing that there are consequences for everything and, you know, animals have feelings too. So, yay for the goldfish.
Yay for humans evolving.
Yes, there you go. In the bigger picture, yay for the humans. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime. We've always got it for you at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi. We've got a dog that's somewhere between probably 11 and 13 years old. We got her as an adult. She's a very small dog, about a foot high and only about 12 pounds. And she's a mutt. She's got some black lab in her. But she tends to get under my daughter's dog, under her bed or behind my bed occasionally, and she just starts clawing like she's digging at the ground, only it's my carpet, which is not a good thing, along with she always seems to do it when we're trying to sleep. And we just think there's something going on we don't figure out.
Okay. Does she do any kind of digging in the yard as far as any digging holes or digging in the grass, anything like that?
Yeah, she does, but nothing like really excessive or out of the ordinary that other animals that we've had have done.
Mm-hmm. And is this something she's always done or is she's gotten older, it's developed?
As she's gotten older.
Okay. Because seems like my dogs are representative of all the calls we seem to get here, because I do have a Labrador that is a carpet digger, and it looks like someone's gone through some of the guest bedrooms with like a rake, because there's toenail marks through the carpet where she digs, usually associated with when she's going to bed. And some dogs have kind of a nesting instinct where they kind of, whether they have a bed or not, they feel the need to kind of dig and kind of make things right where they're laying down. My dog will actually do this in her sleep. She wakes up, gets up, and does this in her sleep as well. So some of that is somewhat of a behavior type issue for her. I guess for an older dog, the other thing that I would consider, if this is something that's developed more as she's gotten in her senior years, is that, you know, we might have some degree of, I don't want to say mental decline, but cognitive dysfunction. We do find that older pets can develop some problems where they maybe don't always recognize their environment as well as they used to. And some of that can include nighttime behaviors, nighttime anxiety, problems settling down where they get up in the middle of the night. A lot of times there's other signs that accompany that, but that could certainly be even part of what we're dealing with. And if it's mostly at nighttime, then there are some steps we might address and we might do. If she's an older gal and she hasn't been to the vet lately, I would definitely want to make sure she gets a clean bill of health and maybe just some basic lab work, make sure there's nothing going on there. But for many pets, I actually do prescribe nighttime sedatives or tranquilizers to help them if it seems to be only a nighttime directed behavior. So that might be something to consider as far as if it's done more when someone's around. There are dogs that do this out of attention seeking, and it's just kind of a way they deal with their anxiety and their stress. So I don't know, is that something where it's done when you guys are nearby, or is it out of your presence?
When nearby, occasionally she'll do it more when my daughter's out of the home for an extended period of time. And then what she'll start to do too was she'll like walk right under your feet, or like if you're sitting down somewhere or at a desk, she wants to be like in your lap, and she's never been a lap dog ever. And just like want this attention all the time. So I think that you're right, that it's possibly associated with her age and the fact, like when my daughter is away.
Mm-hmm. And if we're looking, you know, for some behavioral steps that we might do to addressing that, you know, we don't want to necessarily reward that type of behavior, but we want to give her something else to do at the time that she can't be doing while she's digging. So, you know, practicing basic obedience commands, the sit, stay, down type things, kind of take her out of that loop of concentrating on that obsessive compulsive behavior and give her something else to do and to focus on. So whether that's, you know, practicing, some old dogs can learn new tricks too, so we can't forget that. So, you know, practicing little behavior steps, giving her a chew item or a favorite treat, something else to focus on than that.
What about the other thing about crating her? I know a lot of people will crate their dogs at night. And if we've tried to, like, put her, we have a little dog run, and she's Houdini. She gets out of that. If we put her in the garage, she then will claw at the door in the door frame. You know, that's kind of out of the option. But I was thinking maybe about just buying her a crate.
You know, for some dogs, a crate can be a wonderful thing. I would be a little concerned for what you're describing and how she behaves when she's either left alone or perceived that she might be alone. So not that she can't do that, but she could still dig at a crate. And we don't want a frustrated, anxious pet who's just confined. That doesn't get us anywhere. So we might need to pair that with other things. So, you know, trying to give her other things to keep her occupied. And you can use a crate, but you just have to make sure you're not leaving her long periods of time, that she's calm when she's in the crate. So you're rewarding calm behaviors and not allowing her to get amped up and anxious, because that's just going to be very counterproductive to keeping her in that kind of environment.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Bye now. We've been doing this for a long time now. We've been here answering your questions for 18 years, and we've had a lot of great celebrity guests. This hour, we're going to feature a flashback. This best of is Sheena Easton. Sheena Easton, the musician, the artist, the singer. She is crazy about her cats, like nobody's business.
Wasn't she a Bond girl, too?
You know what? She's had a very illustrious career and continues. And she's coming up in a flashback next. Stick around.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
And now an Animal Radio flashback.
I'm pretty happy. We have Pop Diva Sheena Easton on the phone with us. Hi, Sheena.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Ow, my cat just attacked me.
Uh-oh. Well, which one?
Oh, this is Yodi. Yoda's her formal name. Ow, Yodi. we have six of them.
Wow.
And two dogs.
And they all get along?
Well, there's two groups. There's the original gangsters, the two originals, and then there's the four sort of newbies, and we have to do a rotation system where the first two get run up the house and then the other four. Luckily, the house is big enough to accommodate that, but they're all rescue cats, and we had two of them, and then, of course, you know, the kids talked me into getting another cat.
So why not?
We brought home from one of those no-kill shelters. We went in, you know, going to get a cute little kitten. And there was this black cat in the cage, curled up in a fetal position, not interested. And the lady said that she'd been stuck in there for 7 months. And, you know, so we said, that's our cat. So we took her home, and I noticed right away she was shaking her head, so she had ear issues. And we took her to the vet, and she got an operation the next day to get a polyp out of her ear.
Wow.
And now she's a happy cat. She's a big fat thing that she's just doing real good. But so when I took her back to the vet to get her ear checked, at the vet, somebody had dumped off a mom and kittens, and of course, I took the mom and the two kittens home. So I went in with one and came home with four, so that gives us six.
Isn't that the way it always happens?
Yeah,
it's never intentional.
It does, but they're so great.
Now, do you spoil them?
Oh, please. Yeah.
What do you think is the most spoiled thing you do for them?
My cat?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, one of the original cats, right?
The original gangsta.
The original gangsters. Her name is Puffy. And she's the most spoiled on the planet because she had panleukopenia. And she was supposed to die at 5 weeks old. Not a lot of survivability.
What is panleukopenia, a cancer? What is
panleukopenia is essentially an extreme form of distemper.
Oh, distemper, okay.
And if you look it up on the internet and just look at what, you know, any cat that's less than 16 weeks, there's about a 90% death rate.
Ooh.
And both these kittens were 5 weeks old. So first of all, they spent a weekend in the emergency, and then I took them to my vet. And this vet, God bless her, she is like the best person in the world. She took my babies home with her.
Wow.
So that she could set her alarm and get up every hour to squirt, you know, this food down their throat to keep them on a drip. And she kept them alive through the worst phase of it, and they survived. For this cat, the long story short, once she's had some problems, she's got a little bit of brain damage issues, and she's also a peer. And so I've removed every piece of carpet. I've removed everything you can think of from downstairs.
She sprays all over?
She will just look at you and sit down and pee right in front of you.
I know those type.
Like, how you doing? I'm just having a little time out here. And so we're, you know how like your grandma will put the plastic covers on the couch and stuff? We have to put plastic covers on the couch.
Yes.
And take them off when we want to sit there. It's a nightmare. So and now she's on kitty downers.
Does it work? We're going to research that because we actually know that multi-cat households like that is a problem. And we know cats like this that last resort is to go to medication like Buspar. They're anxious cats. They pee all over.
Well, you know, all of the cats have no litter issues, but Puffy always had a litter issue. And I'm one of those people, I'll research everything. I have every book on cats you can think of. And right from the get-go, the signs were there. She has never attempted to cover up when she goes in her litter box. When she was a kitten, all the other cats go in, they're fastidious. They'll be in there for an hour digging. She just goes in, she leaves her business, and she walks away. She's never, and they say in all the books, that can sort of indicate issues down the line. And before any of the other cats came along, she had issues where she would go outside of the box. So I don't think that it's the classic mark in the territory thing. And, you know, everybody says, I don't know how you put up with it, but I look in her eyes and what am I going to do? She's my baby.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. You're not going to get rid of her.
No. So that's her spoiled thing. The whole family revolves around Puffy issues. Make sure your bedroom doors are shut. You know, I get those big couple of gallon things. You know, I go around and I spray as soon as I notice anything. So there's no odors whatsoever in the house because I'm like fastidious about keeping it clean. But the main thing is just, you know what? We've got wood and tile floors now downstairs. Plus, I have those little diffusers with the that you plug into the sockets that put the pheromone stuff in the air.
Comfort zone.
Feel away.
I do it all. I do it all. I've got it all. I mean, if it's been out there, I'll try voodoo. I'll stick pins in something if it need be, you know. I'll get a little doll.
How did the dogs get along with all of this?
My dogs love the cats.
Really?
Yeah. No, I grew up where I always had dog and cat households. I'd say most times, unless you've got a dog that you just know isn't going to take to cats, my dogs love them. The cats climb all over them. They play with them. They do this thing where they chase each other around the house. No, they get along great.
Sounds like you love your animals a lot.
Man, I'm telling you. My kids told me that, you know, I'm basically going to be a crazy cat lady. But they said that, I don't get crazy cat lady status until, he said, that the thing that will define that is when they leave to go to college and I live alone and I move into a tiny little apartment and I have 20 cats. And that could very well happen.
Sheena Easton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
This has been an Animal Radio Flashback. Listen to more Animal Radio at animalradio.pet.
Award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler is known for her novels about dogs and how they bring out the best in humans. Her newest, A Reason for Hope, is an uplifting story of resilience, redemption, and a special yellow lab named Hope, a courthouse dog who's trained to comfort victims and witnesses. When a woman's life is upended by trauma, Hope gives her the courage to seek justice. A Reason for Hope by Kristen von Kreisler is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit kensingtonbooks.com.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Hey there. How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm fine, just fine.
What's going on with your animals? You have a dog or a cat?
No, I've just got a dog, big old Jake.
What's wrong with Jake?
It just started out, he was always hungry, and he's huge. So we found out he had a thyroid problem. So we put him on thyroid medicine. Then all of a sudden, he just started losing weight like it was just falling off of him. And I'm talking about like 2.5, 3 weeks. And then he started drinking a lot of water. I thought, that ain't right. Something's wrong. So took him back. Guess what? He's diabetic. So now he's taking 25 units twice a day of insulin.
Okay.
And
all right.
His weight has seemed to level off at about 88 to 90. His water consumption's down. But then he started getting this growth around his penis. And I thought, you know, how some dogs have those knots at the base where they copulate, they get big or whatever. I thought that's what it was. Well, honey, it's as big as a grapefruit now.
Ooh.
And it's real soft and spongy. He's got one on his left hip.
Okay.
He's got one on a small one on his chest. He's got a small one on his ear. Now, when he was about a year old, he got shot. Some dickhead shot him with a gun, and he still got 50 to 52 pellets still in his body, in the lower half from his lungs back to his rear. Now, I don't know if his body is starting to grow fatty bodies around some of the pellets or what's going on. But anyway, we got him straight, got all that going on, and now he's starting, he'll cough once in a while and go, ugh. And I mean, it's like he's trying to clear his throat.
Okay.
And then the thing that's got me concerned the most is if he's laying down, he's not comfortable. Then he moves over to another place and he lays down. Then he'll get up and move again. He'll get up and move again. And then every time he moves and sort of rolls around, he moans and groans.
Okay.
And he's starting to moan and groan more often. And then I told my mother, I said, look at him. He ain't been outside. And he's sitting there panting. So usually when an animal's sitting there panting, he's sore or he's hurting or something's going on. I have had him x-rayed head to toe. I've had his blood drawn. I've spent about $3,000 to $4,000 on that dog this year. I don't know what to do. And I just feel like something is not right. And I don't want to not do something and then find out, had you done this earlier, you know, he'd be okay. So I'll tell you something else he's never done. He now sleeps on his back. When he does get comfortable, he seems to roll flat over on his back, throw his legs straight up in the air, and he'll lay like, you know, sprawled out that way. And he's never done that. He didn't do it as a pup. And he just started doing that recently. And I don't know if it's more comfortable for him because there's something inside of his body that's pushing on organs. And I just don't know.
All right. So I wanted to ask you about, more specifically, about if he makes any coughing sounds or any unusual breathing sounds when he's taking air in or out.
The only thing he does, like I said a minute ago, and he only does it, I don't know, once, maybe twice a day, and he doesn't do it constantly in a row. He'll do it like once, and he'll go, ugh! And it's like a real deep guttural grunt, and it's like he's trying to clear his throat. Sometimes I notice it after he drinks water. And sometimes I notice that when Mama gives him one of them dry milk bones, she gives him once in a while.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's trying to clear his throat or what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, you got a lot of kind of oddities going on, and the general thing that I think that, you know, I can answer for you is that when we have a pet that is uncomfortable, seems restless, is vocalizing in any way, and their behaviors are changed in a pattern that they've not normally done, to me that says there's something going on. And whether it's pain, discomfort, or feeling ill at ease, there's something that he's telling us that is going on. So I would want to make sure, you know, it sounds like he's got quite a detailed medical history, but in a situation like his, the first thing I would want to do is, you know, make sure that our diabetes is well controlled. And, you know, we do that by checking things like a blood sugar curve and a test called fructosamine, and making sure that that's all up to par.
She's done all of the blood work. I spent like $700 and some odd on blood work to get all that done. And then she said, no, he's on like 25 milligrams or 25 units twice a day. In the morning and evening on that, and we're still doing that. That seems to be, I guess, doing him okay. But
yeah,
I just feel like
And it's kind of hard, you know, just hearing that the blood work's okay, that's good. You know, my scrutinizing mind, you know, for me, I would have to kind of see that and kind of make sure there's nothing that would send me in another direction on that. But assuming that everything is okay with his diabetes, there's still other things that we would be on the watch for. So whether we're dealing with something of a pain, arthritic pain, we also can see some problems in Labradors particularly, where they can have a condition called laryngeal paralysis. And that can affect their swallowing and breathing, and it can cause them to have some harsh sounds. And sometimes they'll actually even kind of, I don't want to say choke or gag on things, but it can kind
that's
of sound.
That's the best way I've heard. That's what it sounds like. And like I said, it's not like he's constantly, like he doesn't have a fit and he does it five or six times in a row. He'll just do it maybe once, twice, once in a blue moon. He'll, and it's, hell, it sounds like a human.
Yeah. So that might be something to raise that question with your veterinarian and say, hey, I'd like to, you know, look at the chest x-rays, make sure we don't see any evidence of any infection that might be setting in because we have problems swallowing. And pets with that condition can actually get food and water into their lungs and get pneumonia. So it is something that we would want to try to, you know, figure out if that is on the table or not. Beyond that, you know, you mentioned some things with lumps and bumps, and especially if we've got some sizable ones, they would be things that I would look into and make sure they have been sampled. If they are like the typical Labrador problems, Labradors are little fat factories, and they are prone to getting some pretty extensive what we call lipomas. So they can get as big as a basketball, believe it or not. But the important thing is, you know, have your veterinarian check that and see if that is the case. If it's not, then that could be part of our problem as far as with his discomfort or having other effects elsewhere in the body from, you know, those larger lumps and masses that he's having.
Well, the little one, I'm not going to worry about that much, but that one back here by his penis, and I mean, when he's laying on his back flat out, you can take both your hands and reach down there and hold it almost like a grapefruit.
Wow. Yeah.
And that has got bigger. And I'm thinking, should I have? I don't like a dog. I don't like any animal cut off unless it's absolutely necessary. And I'm just at the point, should I have that removed or not?
Okay, Glenn, I'm going to tell you, if you walk into my office with something the size of a grapefruit dangling off your dog, I'm going to at least want to test it. So, you know, before you jump into the idea of surgery, I'd say, you know, ask your veterinarian to just do a needle biopsy on it and get an idea what it is. And that can be done without anesthesia. Yep, a needle biopsy.
I've done all that. I said, stick a needle in every damn one of these lumps.
You did. Okay.
They're just fatty bodies.
Okay. So if they're just fatty tumors.
They're not going to hurt them. But okay. I've had a bunch of dogs. This is my fourth lab, and I've never had any problems like this.
Oh, golly. And, it sounds like at his young age, he's already got quite a bit going on there. So.
Yeah, it all started out years. He's allergic to chicken. He's allergic to some grasses and some other stuff. I'm like, holy cow. And he's a hell of a dog. He was raised for special needs and autistic children. His vocabulary is unbelievable when it comes to dogs. I mean, his vocabulary is way up there as far as go get this, go get that, go do this, don't do that. You're like, damn. My mother said, if he could talk, I believe he'd talk to you.
Aww. But, oh, gosh.
I don't know. I'm just concerned. I just don't want to get a month or two down the road and go, oh, had we caught this earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two labs died of cancer. And so I quit doing the heartworm pills. The only thing I give him is NexGard for fleas. I did some research on all this crap dumping in these dogs, and I thought,
I'm not going to advocate anybody stop their heartworm preventative because heartworm disease is fatal, and that in itself is a killer. I can't tell you how many animals are positive in certain parts of the country at any given moment, and it is a very real disease. So you do want to make sure you do something for heartworm preventative. So that's a totally different subject. We won't go there. But I would definitely say for you, Glenn, that I would advise, you know, asking about the laryngeal paralysis situation, and then just really have a heart-to-heart about, you know, what kind of pain management do we need to kind of consider for him for the long term. And if we aren't addressing pain management, then that would be an avenue that I would say, in the absence of proof that a pet is not in pain, I would always, with these kind of symptoms, want to make sure we are trying to manage that and do something, and then see if he feels better and the symptoms get better afterwards. So my best wishes to you, and keep up the great work with him. He sounds like he's surrounded by love in your home.
Thanks, Glenn, for your call.
Well, don't forget, you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now. It's made possible by Fear-Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
And now an Animal Radio news brief.
British scientists have a theory that dinosaurs caused their own extinction. Yep, by breaking wind. Mm-hmm. Evidently, a lot of times. Their new study adds passing gas to the most likely causes, which include an asteroid strike and volcanic activity for their demise. The researchers determined that prehistoric beasts were responsible for tooting about 520 million tons of methane a year. That's a lot of gas. That would have been enough to warm the Earth during the Mesozoic era and lead to their extinction. Giant plant-eating sauropods are being held as the main offenders for having a daily diet of a half ton of ferns and producing clouds of methane. The study appears in the Current Biology. I know some people that could have led to that extinction, too, without eating ferns, just eating some other things. A few times I felt like I could have keeled over. Well, I live with three boys. You know, it happens.
This has been an Animal Radio News Brief. Get more at animalradio.pet.
This is
Animal Radio, baby.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Hey, it's Alan Cable. Got an email from a listener. How do I stop my dog from jumping on people? That's a pretty common problem. Chances are you're unwittingly rewarding your dog for jumping on you. I was at the dog park the other day. There was a nice lady there. We got into a conversation. She kept going, go ahead, play, play, come on, to her dog. And I finally said, your dog is playing. Every time you say that, you're confusing him because he runs over and jumps on you. He's already doing what you want and doesn't know what you want him to do. He's going to play on his own. All you have to do is stand there, and he really doesn't understand what you're saying. It was interesting for me. I could see the confusion in her dog, but she couldn't. He was already playing with another dog. Every time she started saying this stuff, he stopped to run over and jump on her. Dogs don't understand your sentences. They do get your tone, though, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood. food. So when the dog was jumping on her, she was getting more excited with her voice, but shooing him away with her hands. So he's confused. It's just all confusing. I'm confused. Anyway, if your dog is jumping on you and other people, especially when you're greeting him, don't speak to him in a positive manner. Make sure there are no rewards for your dog when he's jumping on you or other people. Even dog lovers who tell you they don't mind your dog's jumping, tell them no. Dogs can't distinguish between, oh, I can jump on him, but I can't jump on her. It's either all or nothing with a dog. He can either jump on everybody or nobody. We always talk about setting your dog up for success, so think about how you'd be setting your dog up for failure if you scolded him for jumping on one person, but rewarded him for jumping on you or another. Wouldn't that be unfair and confusing and create anxiety in you if you were that dog? Well, that's what it does. So if your dog jumps on you when you get home, make it a non-event. Don't talk to your dog. Don't greet him for about 15 minutes after you get home. This will make your dog calmer, less anxious. Then when you do say hi, bend over and pet him at his level. This way he doesn't have to jump on you. And finally, teach your dog the sit and off commands. You do this by correcting your dog quickly and sternly when he jumps on you. And then when he sits, you tell him he's a good dog.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, Dora.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I have Dr. Debbie right here. What's going on?
Okay. I have a question. I have my dog. He's a Jack Russell mixer with Chihuahua.
Uh-huh.
He's more or less like 10 years old. And he has like a ear infection. So he has like, every time he walks, he shakes his head. So I feel like he has like kind of water inside his ear. He has brownish, like kind of black outside his ears.
Okay. Kind of looks all like what I call Oreo cookie crumbs coming out of the ear.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, and does it smell?
Yes.
All righty. Now, does he have any other problems on the rest of his body, scratching, chewing, anything, or is it just his ears that seem to be bothering him?
Just his ears.
All righty. Well, this would be something where if I had your baby right here, I would definitely put one of my little otoscope cones, which is basically a way we look down a doggy's ear canal.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is I probably wouldn't see a lot, because if we're having that much garbage coming out of the ear, we've got a pretty bad infection going on of some sort.
Yeah.
So the question is, what kind? And generally, what we veterinarians will do is we'll take a sample of it and look under the microscope and see what we've got. With that kind of description of having this kind of Oreo cookie crumb looking stuff, you know, it's pretty open game of what's causing that. We could have something like ear mites, which are little microscopic critters that are itchy beyond all reason. So that would certainly explain why he might be shaking his head. And that can be detected by taking a sample and looking. But other causes, bacteria as well as yeast, can commonly kind of take hold of the inside of a dog's ear and really take advantage of that if the environment's right.
Yeah.
Dog ears are dark and moist down inside there, so it is just an environment that if the scales tip in the wrong direction, it's not hard for them to get an infection of that kind. So I would certainly say a trip to the vet and getting a sample of that would be first and foremost on my list. But there is kind of a quick and simple thing you can do. If you can get a small little piece of this material, you can put it on a piece of white paper, take a little bit of hydrogen peroxide and spray it on there. Now, if we have real blood, it'll actually bubble and fuzz and do that kind of thing. If it doesn't, that tells us, ew, this is some real icky grit. This is some material, some kind of product of an organism, and we really need to, investigate along that pathway. Either which way, I think in your baby's case, we really need to get some good cleaning on that ear, get a good look down there, and get a sample, because, yeah, if he's shaken, you know, that's kind of like us walking around tipping our head to the side.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, there could be water, but it's probably more than water. It's probably this material, kind of a congestion and an irritation that's causing him to do that. So, yeah, I would certainly say let's see the vet, get some medication going. And then in many cases, once we get past an ear infection, there's some things you can do to try to help prevent that down the road. And there are some very good cleaners that help to keep the environment of the ear canal so that these kind of critters don't take advantage of that. We can kind of keep that from happening in the future. I'd say let's sign up for a good ear exam and see what we need to get going inside that ear canal.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Animal Radio.
Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
You hear a lot of campaign promises, but in Sri Lanka, a presidential candidate is running on a bovine bill. Well, more specifically, he says that if he's elected, he'll buy a cow for every home on the island. Victor Hedegota owns a very successful herbal medicine empire and says the cow plan would help fight malnutrition and help people prosper. He says the milk could be made into cheese and butter and sold. He also suggested that people who lived in apartments could make arrangements to have their cow taken care of. Hedegota is hoping the gift of a cow will move citizens to cast their vote for him. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
All of us here at Fido Friendly Magazine can't wait to get on the road again with our favorite Fido. We know that it's just not a vacation without our furry companions by our side. Start daydreaming now and visit FidoFriendly.com to scout out places near and far so you will be ready for your next adventure once it's safe to travel. That's FidoFriendly.com. Until then, stay safe and leave no dog behind.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. So how loyal is your dog to you? Would he or she come running to your rescue should you need help? Well, believe it or not, they might actually do a lot more than just run to your rescue, according to a new study. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University recently tested the extent to which dogs would go to check on a crying human parent or owner. And previous studies had already explained dogs' really strong reactions to human crying. You might have noticed this in your life. But this study was trying to really demonstrate the science behind a dog's eager and speedy response to human crying. Now, researchers wanted to know whether the dogs were more likely to open a door to get to their owner if the owner was crying rather than if they were doing something unimportant like humming. So the dogs who opened the door at the sound of their owner crying did so 3 times faster than those dogs who responded to their owner's humming. This study also measured the dogs' stress levels during the test and found that the dogs who were able to reach their crying owners, that they showed lower levels of stress than dogs who were non-responsive to their owner's crying. You think, what's up with that? It might seem that the dogs who did not open the door and try to reach their owner or their crying owner, it might seem like they didn't care. But these experts say, in fact, the dogs with the highest stress levels during the experiment were actually the ones who were frozen in their tracks, unable to physically react to the sound of their human in distress. And this study I thought was pretty interesting. If you'd like to check out the whole thing. The full study was published in the journal Learning and Behavior. Now, if you've ever stood in, and I know that we've probably all done this because I know what kind of people we are. If you've ever stood in the camping section of like Walmart or Target or one of those big stores or a sporting goods store and wondered, how could I get one of these tents for my cat? Or my little chihuahua?
Those little tents.
Yes, I love those. Aren't they cute? So we're happy to report, because we've all wondered the same thing, this is no longer a problem. Cats Camp, which is an Australian company, has created these new teeny tiny tents for indoor cats. They're not cheap. They're about $60 each. They set up exactly like a human-sized tent that you would see in the sporting goods department. And they say that they make tiny cat tents serve as a high-quality cat bed. So there's actually something inside of it, as well as a cozy cat hideaway. Wow. And that makes somebody like me happy, who I've always enjoyed making cat apartments, I call them. Get more breaking animal news anytime. We've always got it for you at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
Need a fix of the good stuff?
Get more Animal Radio with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Alan Cable spending the best part of my day with you. Last week, there was a story of a restaurant manager who got into a physical confrontation with a customer who had a service dog. Service dogs are really important to a lot of people. Many times, they can mean the difference between life and death, so I wanted to present this story to you.
Yeah.
His name is Johnny. He's 8 years old, and he just got a life-saving dog.
There you go, Johnny. Here's your tester.
I'm good.
All right.
His blood sugar needs constant monitoring.
Diabetes is a 24-hour constant worry.
So Johnny's got a little dog named Hero now who's a diabetic alert dog.
They don't run on batteries, they run on love.
She can actually smell when his blood sugar's too low. And then she nudges up against him. If that doesn't work, she gets help.
I know it's just going to be an amazing thing for him. And if anything happens, the dog will come.
Feels like she's my friend.
His mom already sees the difference.
I think it's going to give him more freedom, more confidence. Now he's not just the kid with diabetes. Now he's like a kid with diabetes and a cool dog.
This is
Animal Radio.
Hi, this is Justin Tyler Ferguson from Modern Family. I'm on Animal Radio. Adopt a pet.
It's Animal Radio. We just had a call about some guy put some pesticide on his lawn and his dog went out over the pesticide while it was still active.
Yeah.
Don't think that's what caused problems for the dog, but that's a very dangerous thing to do. You got to wait for that stuff to dry, and sometimes wait a couple of days and check the instructions.
The thing is a lot of times if you walk your dog around the neighborhood, you don't know what your neighbors have
what
put
other
on their
people
yards.
Have done. Yes, it's hard to tell.
It is.
So apropos, we join right now with Dr. Anna Brutlag. She is the director in veterinary services and senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So how many times during the beginning of the year do you hear about these pesticides on lawns that really mess with dogs and cats?
Daily. Absolutely. We get a lot of questions. And because it's a lot of people use them, so therefore you're going to have a lot of exposure, which leads to a lot of questions. And thankfully, most of the pesticides that are used nowadays on lawns, for the most part, are pretty safe, but there still are a few standouts that we really worry about.
Oh, like what? Which ones should we be worrying about?
Well, the ones that I worry about are typically not the herbicides necessarily. It's more the insecticides that are put on lawns. And one that we see particular problems with dogs in is it's insecticide granules with the active ingredient bifenthrin. So that's B as in boy, bifenthrin. And these are meant to, you know, they're really, for the most part, you know, something that you broadcast on your lawn, and if an animal walks across a lawn and licks its feet, they typically can't get too much in that kind of exposure. But if the owner left that bag out and the dog got into that bag of product, or they had a little pile on the yard trying to, you know, trade an anthill or something like that, and the dog were to eat that pile of granules, then we can really see some pretty significant neurological effects.
I just got a press release from you about Decon and their mice and rat killer. And that they've changed the ingredients of their mice and rat killer. And how does that affect our animals? I mean, I would think it's dangerous any way you cut it.
Yeah, but it's going to kill something.
Right, exactly. And so you're right. It is, you know, kind of, we worry about, you know, anything that can poison a rat or a mouse can also poison a cat or a dog. We don't have things that just poison mice and spare other mammals. So, but the big change here is that Decon historically has always used blood thinner type rodenticides in their products. And what we liked about that as veterinarians is, you know, you never want to see an animal get into this stuff, but if they do, there's a very safe, easy, you know, cheap, easily reliable antidote that's available that all veterinarians have in there at their disposal. And so even if a dog, you know, did get too much of the old Decon, the blood thinner type, we could start them on the antidote and chances are they would do very well. With the new ingredient, it's called cholecalciferol, and that's also vitamin D3. So it's the same kind of vitamin D, you know, you and I make from sunshine. Animals need vitamin D because of their fur. They need to eat vitamin D. But, you know, an overdose of vitamin D can be pretty hard on the kidneys. It can be hard on the heart. It can cause other blood, you know, other issues. And it's harder to treat those in a poisoning scenario than it was the old anticoagulant baits.
So there's like no particular medicine that the veterinarians can serve up if they get in
there? There are. That's a good question, Hal. There are medicines that we can give, and we do use them. So we do things like we give those pets IV fluids, because what happens is they eat an overdose of vitamin D, and their blood calcium levels and their blood phosphorus levels get too high. And when your calcium and phosphorus get too high, those molecules combine and they form mineral. So it's almost like you think of these little guys as kind of turning to stone. You know, they lay down mineral deposits in the kidneys, mineral deposits in the heart, and those mineral deposits cause organ damage. So what we want to do as veterinarians is we want to get that blood calcium level back down to a normal level. And there are, we do that by using a lot of IV fluids, and there are some specific drugs that you can give that are helpful in most cases. But they're drugs that are given in the hospital, they're IV medications, so these animals usually end up spending more time in the hospital just simply to get all the medications that they need, versus with our anticoagulants, they usually only had to spend maybe a day or two, you know, at the most in the hospital, unless it was a very, very severe case.
So the switch over to this new formula with the vitamin D, was that meant to help save animals and it's having the reverse effect, or that was just something that they just did not even caring about the other animals?
Well, that's a great question because it does have kind of an interesting past. So the change was actually to help, they made this change because they had to comply with new EPA regulations. So in 2008 to 2011, EPA changed the rodenticide laws. And what they said is if you're going to have a rodenticide that's sold for use in someone's house, they call these the consumer rodenticide baits. If it's a consumer bait, it can have basically one of three types of ingredients. It can have these kind of more old school, essentially anticoagulants. It can have vitamin D, or it can have something called bromethalin, which is a neurotoxicant for which there is absolutely no antidote. So what DECON did is they said, well, first, we're going to try the kind of more old-school anticoagulants, but they were, you know, there's a lot of hesitancy there because those have been tried in the past and they aren't as effective. So they tried coming out with one of the kind of new, I should say new old-school, but that's exactly what it was, anticoagulants. Unsurprisingly, it didn't work very well. So then they were faced with a choice. Do we put out vitamin D or do we put out bromethalin? And they chose what they felt was the safer option, which is vitamin D, because at least, again, there are some more treatment options for it.
Okay, so many questions, so little time here. We got to take a quick break. We are with Dr. Anna Brutlag. She is the senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. Stick around.
Hey, this is Josh DeMille on Animal Radio. Please adopt a pet.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Hi, this is Elaine Boozler on Animal Radio. Spay and neuter your pets and some of your exes.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets, keeping them healthy and keeping them out of the toxin, whether that's insecticide on the lawn or something that's in the garage. With us is Dr. Anna Brutlag. She is the senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. We're putting salt on the sidewalk, all kinds of chemicals on the sidewalk. We're putting antifreeze in the car. Is there a particular antifreeze that we should be looking at that's safer to have around? Because I know animals, especially dogs, they like to lick sweet stuff up. Or is there a particular salt or stuff we should be putting on our sidewalk as the snow approaches?
Yeah, good question. For antifreeze, there is something out there. There's a couple different brands that make what's called a kind of quote-unquote pet-safe antifreeze. And the difference is that one is made from a chemical called propylene glycol, not from the traditional antifreeze, which is ethylene glycol. So these are cousin chemicals, but ethylene glycol causes much more damage to the kidneys than propylene glycol does. So what that means is a dog could drink more propylene glycol compared to traditional antifreeze before it would get sick. So it still can drink enough to get sick, cats too, but it takes a lot more of it to cause an issue. So that would be something that I would recommend for pet owners. But the bigger thing is just if you have any kind of antifreeze product in your garage, in your home, keep it out of reach. Because we see so many situations where a dog gets a hold of the bottle, especially a bigger dog, they find a bottle full of liquid, they want to chew on it, and that's how they get exposed. Or they get exposed while someone's out changing antifreeze in their transmission in the car, and or transmission, maybe that's not the right, you can tell I'm not a mechanic, whatever it is, but the antifreeze goes into. So, they've got a bucket of used antifreeze or new antifreeze, and that's what the dog, just sticks its head in the bucket and laps away. So that's where we see a lot of our issues.
Hey, Dr. Anna, I have a question for you with my dad in mind. He's got this massive garage, and he just turned 80, and he's got all of these old chemicals and bottles of this and that. I mean, he's got a cure for everything in the form of a chemical in there. So what are some of the older chemicals that we should stay away from that might still be really dangerous these days?
Yeah, well, frankly, antifreeze is still up there. It's been around for a long time. But some of the other older ones, like older pesticides, especially older insecticides or older systemic flower care. So, like, for example, there used to be this product that you would put on roses, for example, or specifically, it was a rose and flower food. You'd put it on the rose is meant to suck it up through its roots, and it's an insecticide. So if an insect is pestering the rose, it's going to die because of the insecticide that's in the rose. And so some of those older products, they don't make them anymore, probably quit making them, 5-7 years ago, but those can be extremely toxic to cats and dogs. Mm. So stuff like that, old pool chemicals, those are other things that are just really concentrated that can be a problem when cats and dogs get into them too. So, that old stuff, there's a good host of problems out there. Yeah.
That's not to mention any of the older populations' medications and pharmaceuticals, which is another whole topic of toxicities.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, we're out of time, but I've learned so much from you. The PetPoisonHelpline.com is the website. We'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at AnimalRadio.pet. Dr. Anna Brutlag, you know how everyone has a doppelganger, a visual, like somebody that looks like them? You sound exactly like Nancy Cartwright. And do you know who she is?
No.
Yes.
I will have to look her up. It's good to have an audio doppelganger. I've never thought about that.
Say don't have a cow man.
I don't have a cow man.
Maybe.
Next time, I'll be prepared.
Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Take care.
You're funny.
Yeah, huh? I swear to God, you put her audio back to back with Nancy, and it would sound identical.
You just
when she
dated.
Said, don't have a cow. It did sound like her.
She has no idea.
Yeah.
She has to be young.
Hey, Dr. Debbie, I'm kind of trying to figure out what I'm gonna do. I was sitting here looking at Roro, and he yawned, and I thought, what can I do to interact with him now and get him more stimulated? And when Dr. Zazie was on earlier, she had mentioned how she loves playing tug of war with her dog, and I have always heard that you shouldn't play tug of war. That dogs can play with other dogs, can play tug of war with other dogs. So I'm wondering, do I finally get to play tug of war with my dogs now, or is this still not a good idea?
It's not, because I actually learned that same thing with my current dog, because there was the desire not to teach them that they were fighting and competing with you over items, that they should always release them to you when you kind of provided that. So I think it really depends on the animal, the purpose, and their drives. I've tried to play tug of war with my dog now, and she was raised not to ever play tug of war with a human, and she just has no interest in it, so It really depends on the pet. And I think the most important thing is to do something that's mentally stimulating for them, something they enjoy. So, if he loves to play tug of war, great. If he would rather sit and watch TV with you, that's not really stimulating, but maybe we could incorporate some kind of activity in there where he goes after like a toy with a food item in it or something like that.
Well, thank you so much, because I was just a little confused. So maybe I will try tug of war with Tater, who is the pit bull, and he's kind of submissive and got good manners most of the time. And Roro would rather just sit on the pillows next to me and snore. So
okay, it's time for us to get on out of here. If you have any questions anytime during the week, you can always ask your questions from the free Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And don't forget to get your fix over at the website at animalradio.pet. Have yourself a great week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Animal Radio Network.